Everyone has an opinion, but he's got the Von Hessler Doctrine. Eric Von Hessler on WSB.
Live from Sherwood Forest, hour one of this special edition of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins now. I am the aforementioned Eric Von Hessler, sitting in for the great Herman Cain this morning. Doctrinaires abound, man of a thousand voices. That's Tim Andrews. He's here.
Good morning.
Autumn Fisher will join us at the bottom of the hour, but have no fear, the handsomest producer in all of producery, Jared Yamamoto, joins us.
What's up, guys?
Big day, lots of news. Let's get started.
Headlines for Tuesday, June 27th.
All right, Jared, what do we got? What's going on?
The White House indicates, Eric, that Syria could be planning another chemical weapons attack.
And they also said there's going to be a penalty for it.
Oh, absolutely.
That they are going to pay for it. Obviously, after the last chemical attack, Trump bombed an airfield in Syria, where it emanated from. This is a little different. This is a little bit shady to me. A little bit shady in the sense that I'm understanding they're even considering a preemptive strike if they believe they're actually getting this stuff ready to go. Apparently, they're going to use it in the South, where they're losing a lot of territory. And we're preparing a preemptive strike. And I think Trump voters and Trump supporters may be a little alarmed with this kind of talk, because that sounds very different from the things that Trump said when he was campaigning. All presidents, when they're president, end up doing things that they didn't quite know they'd be doing when they're running during the campaign. But he ran very... You never had a Republican candidate run against a former Republican president as much as this one ran against Bush and the neocons. And at least the initial flush, when you first hear this story, woke up this morning, the White House is saying they have intelligence that Syria is making the moves, as Arnold Schwarzenegger would say.
Making
the moves necessary to do another chemical attack. And I know I can't be the only one who got flashbacks and thought this sounds like neocon. This sounds like America steps in and strikes before something bad happens. And you can argue about whether that's the right way or the wrong way. There's no argument that President Trump ran for president as somebody who was opposed to that kind of messing around with the Middle East. We're not even talking here whether it's right or wrong, whether it be effective or non-effective. Just very different from the way he ran. So I have to use that hackneyed phrase. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, but we have to see. You know, it's very difficult to know what's going to be done. Perhaps he thinks this warning will stop it, but the problem is, with a warning like this, you kind of box yourself in, right? So if they do it, we have to go. There's no way that we cannot do something, and that sets that up. I just wonder about Trump supporters. I think they're a little bit wary on this one. Most people came around to the idea of making them pay for the last time, given the fact that there was evidence and we could see evidence. Whether that was the full picture or not, we don't know. But we all saw people being harmed and understood why that was working that way. But when you start talking preemptive strikes and running against Bush and the neocons the way that Trump did, I think some people are a little wary. We'll just have to see how it works out. Next story.
The new healthcare CBO came out yesterday, and you'd never know that it actually saves money compared to the Affordable Health Care Act.
Yeah. Well, the big headline out of it is that how many people?
22 million people uninsured is what read on CBS, NBC, and ABC.
Everything seems to be scored to 2026. And, yeah, well, this is what happens is the CBO, I think President Trump has a name for them.
CBO, Corrupt Budget Office. It's the deep state, I'm telling you.
Okay, so the reality here is the CBO is pretty good at numbers, but it's not very good at projections. It can tell you what will happen maybe a year after some sort of legislation goes through, but it's very bad. I think Senator David Perdue said this. The CBO has no track record, none that's good, of projecting how people will react to a change in the law, any law, not just this one. And so it's a snapshot. 22 million people will be off Obamacare that were in an Obamacare, but we don't know how many of those people didn't want to be there to begin with. These could just be the people, or not just, but it could, in large part, could be people who were forced to buy health insurance that didn't want to buy health insurance. When you get to this Senate version of this bill, I mean, it's just impossible. This is a mission impossible for the Republicans because they didn't just say repeal when they were campaigning. They said replace. And so now they're stuck in a situation where they're trying to make something good that can't be good. They're trying to create what Trump referred to as a beautiful, wonderful healthcare
something
thing.
Fair, nice, beautiful, not mean.
And they are using the bones of Obamacare to build it on top of. I said this earlier with Scott Slade. It's what they're dealing with. It's almost like having a puzzle. And there's a, you know how the picture of how the puzzle is supposed to come out is on the box, and it's beautiful and it's wonderful. But then you open the box, and none of the pieces inside actually will work for the picture on the outside. So what the Republicans are doing now is they're because the puzzle pieces are still Obamacare that they're working
right.
with. So they're throwing a few pieces out, and then they're trying to fashion a few pieces, wedge a few pieces in, and you still have a Frankenstein's monster.
It's got to have heart, though. It's got to have heart.
By the way, when you hear got to have heart, heart equals money. So anytime you hear more heart from any politician, I don't care where they come from, it means we need more of your money to do this. It really is. They've set themselves up in a position. I don't know whether it's going to go to the floor this week or it's going to pass this week, but it's really a situation that is impossible. You cannot, it is not possible to make wonderful, affordable government health care stuck on the back of Obamacare. And so it's going to happen. Von Hessler Doctrine, I've told you before, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. They're going to get something through this year. People are going to stop calling it Obamacare. They're going to start calling it Trump Care. In a few years, that's not going to work either because it's a Frankenstein's monster. What Obama did by putting most of the pain in 2016 and 2017 is he got people hooked on the government. We live in a world now, in this America, where most people expect the government is going to help them with their medical bills. So therefore, politicians are going to tell them what they want to hear, and then they're going to come up here, and this is the first test. We're going to try to fix Obamacare, make it market-oriented. That's not going to work. So after Obamacare fails, after Trump Care fails, we will go to single-payer health care. I'm a libertarian. I'm against it. I'm here to report to you what is going to happen because people have become convinced that it is the government's job to help them pay their medical bills. So that's where we're headed. Trump Care, no matter what it looks like, is not in the end going to be great. It'll be better than Obamacare because, as you said at the top of this story, we are saving money. I think it's something in the area of
$321 billion, Eric.
By 2026.
Yes.
Still, unfortunately, because of the way we run this country, a drop in the bucket when you have $20 trillion debt. But I would rather save that money. And the CBO doesn't know how people who end up not having health care in the immediate future, the CBO doesn't know what they're going to do next. Also, Tom Price is saying there's more to come. The whole part about states being able to compete across, insurance being able to compete across state borders. And so we don't know what that's going to look like, and we don't know how people will respond to that, and neither does the CBO. But if you're Rand Paul and you're saying this isn't repeal, I'm with you. You're absolutely correct. But what are your choices? If you don't vote for this, you're left with Obamacare. People seem to think that it'll be nothing. Well, if we don't get Trump Care, there'll be... No, until there is something else. You see, this wasn't an executive order. A lot of Obama's stuff was turned over very easily with another executive order. This is law. This is legislation. If you don't replace it, you're left with what you have. So it's rocking a hard place. Mission impossible. Probably the Republicans should get on board just because... It's a little better than Obamacare, but that's all that it is.
So what do you think Mitch McConnell has to do? I mean, it's a shame that it seems like that Scalise thing happened 3 weeks ago, but it was only 2 weeks ago, and everybody was unified. But now Mitch McConnell is having this issue where he's got Democrats saying one thing, he's got those, I think it's 7 Republican senators saying another thing, and then the Republicans are disagreeing too. So what is he supposed to do, Eric?
Probably his job is to take care of these things behind closed doors, just as it was Paul Ryan's job. The problem is when you look at Obamacare, and it was a surprise to me when we started tearing into that, so much of it is just an expansion of Medicaid. And when the federal government steps in and shoves money down to the states and takes care of citizens of any individual state. Take Ohio, for example. You end up with Republican governors who have good numbers. And it's based on the fact that they accepted. Now, in Georgia, we didn't accept that expanded Medicaid. But in many states that are run by Republicans that have Republican senators who will be up for re-election, if you pull that Medicaid now, by the time re-election comes around, it's going to look ugly for those Republicans. So it's very difficult for Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell cannot look a person in the eye and say, I guarantee you, you're going to win your next election. That's on them. That's what I say we go back to Obama's win here. It doesn't matter if it's called Trump Care or anything in the future. The win is that within 6-7 years, people have already accepted the fact that the government is supposed to help them with their medical bills. And this is what every person who has to run for office deals with. And if you're a popular Republican governor, you know, remember when John Kasich was running and, oh, he's balanced the budget and he's done a lot of that was because they accepted the expanded Medicaid and made him look very good. We're in a situation where more states are run by Republicans, not just governors, but state senates and their own state. Republicans are running most of the states at all levels right now. So who is on the chopping block in the next election if people feel like the carpet was pulled from beneath their feet? And that's what they're dealing with. So, Mitch McConnell, you asked me the question. I'll just throw it right back at you. This is a mission impossible, starting with the campaigning saying repeal and replace. If they just would have said repeal, it could have been done. But what they know is if they just said repeal, they probably would have lost. That's American politics. More headlines when we return. Welcome back. Eric Von Hessler filling in for the great Herman Cain. I said, this is Jared. What do Rand Paul and Nancy Pelosi have in common?
Well, they both agree on this health care bill.
Yeah, they both don't like it. Following up on our conversation going into the spots there, here's Rand Paul.
I'm still concerned we don't fix the problem. I'm concerned that we're going to keep most of the Obamacare subsidies, most of the Obamacare regulations, and create a new federal program. That, to me, just doesn't sound like repeal.
And he is absolutely right, but he's never going to get what he wants because the Republicans didn't run on repeal. They ran on repeal and replace. And when they put in the replace, they doomed themselves into this mission impossible. Nancy Pelosi, you know, I like the way that she's always so, what's the word I'm looking for here? Understated, subtle in her commentary?
We do know that the many more people, millions, hundreds of thousands of people will die if this bill passes.
Yeah, I like the way she kind of hunted around there. Millions, and now hundreds of thousands, right there down the middle. Hundreds of thousands of people will die.
She had to check her internal hyperbole meter.
Yes, that's a little too much.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people will die. Cats will marry dogs. It will be raining fish. You know, this is from all sides now. All sides, in every debate, I don't care where you are, they say if the other side wins this election, if the other side wins this debate on this particular legislation, if that happens, it's the end of the world. And the media, especially when the Democrats are saying it's the end of the world, they're happy to pile on. And I think people, really for the most part, have tuned out a little bit. You can only be Chicken Little saying the sky is falling for so long. And then people just, you know, there's a story. You know, nobody trusts news. You know, Trump has whatever numbers he has. Are they real or not? We really don't know because he had bad numbers and he won the presidency. So if you believe the numbers, he's at 36%. But Congress is at 9. You know, the media is at 5 or 7. So
nobody trusts anybody.
Everyone is calling names and everyone is saying the sky is falling.
We do know that many more people, hundreds of thousands of people will die if this bill passes.
250 million people will perish immediately and just disappear into the void.
Some people, it'll be like that show, The Leftovers. We won't know why they're gone, but they will be gone.
And there'll be a parallel world where those people have health care and then they die and come here and they won't have health care.
Well, was she stammering around looking for, first of all, she says, we know. I'd like to know what that means, we know. And hundreds of thousands, and she's like, hundreds of millions, many. She starts with many.
We do know that many more people.
Many more.
Hundreds of thousands of people will die if this bill passes.
Maybe. If you know, you use the word know, K-N-O-W, short for knowledge. If you know, why would you have to hunt around for the number? It's many millions.
I'm trying to figure it out. I got 4, 5, 6, 28, 9, 4. One of those.
You're not good with math on the fly, I guess.
Botox affects my memory.
You look good for 137 or whatever you just turned.
When you see her on that interview, she was on CBS's this morning, and my gosh, Eric, her hands are just flailing everywhere, and her eyes are as big as can be in that interview. You could tell that she's like reaching in the back of her head for some kind of number.
I almost feel like you say she's on Adderall or something.
No, she's not on Adderall. Sounds makes her eyes smaller.
Okay, you say she was tripping. Her pupils were wide open.
It was wide open. But I mean, people always get on to you about your hands moving all the time. I mean, her hands were all over the place.
It's called Olderall. Yeah.
Keeps you young, Nancy Pelosi.
Keeps you young, yes, sir.
So that you can make sure that hundreds of thousands of millions of many people don't die. All right, we are going to get a visit from our buddy English Nick from our sister station, The River, because it'll be time for Outrage Corner when we return. Welcome back. I'm Eric Von Hessler. This is the Von Hessler Doctrine. We're filling in for the great Herman Cain. The other voices you hear are the Doctrinaires. And the Doctrinaire has just joined us from our sister station, The River. English Nick is here. That means it's time to find out what's outraging the world.
Outrage Corner.
That's outrageous.
With English Nick.
See? Set the table for you. Go ahead.
Eric, you remember this lady called Catherine Detweiler?
Did I date her at one point?
No,
or?
Well, if you did, you may have come across some horrible comments from her. She was the lady who said the Otto Warmbier, the guy who was imprisoned in Korea and then later died, she said he was young, white, rich, and clueless.
Oh, yeah. So
now she's been fired from the University of Delaware.
So we're saying that the outrage is the comments. The justice is that she was actually fired.
Ousted.
She started her little Facebook comment. Is it wrong of me to think that Otto Warmbier got exactly what he deserved? Well, the answer would be a resounding yes. It would be wrong for you to say that. And the interesting thing here to me, we've talked about this before. This is college left, right? This is academia. These are the people who demand safe spaces. These are the people who demand that people not be triggered. Even they could be sensitive to the most minute sort of criticism, and so they can't be triggered. And yet when it comes to the people that they don't like, the academic left, not only are microaggressions okay, but green light for macroaggressions. Also, these are the people who say, never judge somebody. You know, just the next terrorist thing that happens, they'll be the first ones that don't judge all Muslims based on these radicals who do the terror. And most of the times, I agree with them, but they're the first ones to jump in there and say, hey, that's the first priority. It's not everybody. You can't judge all Muslims based on the fact that there is a percentage of them who like to blow us up. You can't judge. You know, in reality, they're right about that. Most Muslims don't do that. But they don't take that and direct it at themselves. According to this new left, when it comes to white males especially, prejudging, that's what, by the way, if you haven't thought about the word prejudice in a while, you prejudge somebody based on their looks. Now, she goes on in this Facebook page, mind you, this professor of anthropology has never met this guy. So I know that she's done Facebook and tweets and talks about how don't judge people by the color of their skin or anything unless they're white. She goes on to say, she's talking about Otto Warmbier. These are the same kids who cry about their grades because they didn't think they'd really have to read and study the material to get a good grade. His parents ultimately are to blame for his growing up thinking he could get away with whatever he wanted. Maybe in the U.S., where young, white, rich, clueless white males, she's a professor, she uses the word white twice where it's not necessarily, young, white, rich, clueless white males routinely get away with raping women. Not so much in North Korea, and of course, it's Otto's parents who will pay the price for the rest of their lives. Now, what's interesting here is from the academic left who says never judge anyone by their appearance. When they call themselves progressives, that's about 75% of what they're talking about, being a progressive thinker and getting to know somebody before you make a judgment on them. But it doesn't apply to this, how old was he, 20 when he went over there? 19,
yeah,
20 years old? This 19-year-old, 20-year-old white kid, it doesn't, see, she knows him. She knows him. She knows that he was rich, clueless, because she knows his type. And it's okay from the point of view of the left to go ahead and judge somebody based on the fact that they're young, white, and male. And there's your double standard. She should have lost her job, obviously. I'm proud of the institution, which actually released a statement that said something like, you're being let go because we have diversity. See, the left is starting to, is a snake beginning to eat its own tail, because they didn't realize that all of these rules that they implemented would actually apply to them. So I'm somewhat proud of the institution. I don't know a lot about them, but the fact that they would say, hey, look, this is you people are enforcing us diversity. Everybody gets along. We don't prejudge. So she got what she deserved, but there's something in there about the new left, what I call the millennial left, where, oh, I need a safe space and you can't microaggress me, but if you're white and young and male, if you're just white and male, it's okay to go with any stereotype whatsoever and assume, this lady assumes she knows this kid and how he was thinking. And by the way, there's still no proof that he actually stole that poster. You know, and I like the idea of this rich, clueless white male routinely get away with raping women, not so much in North Korea, praising North Korea as a better place to live as a young woman than the United States because they don't let rich, young, white kids get away. It's a sickness that is going on. And if you, we're on 11 to noon every day, the Von Hessler Doctrine. If you know me, you know that I dole it out to both sides. I'm not happy with the heat involved with the political conversation from the left or from the right. So when I see a double standard on the right, I'll call it out. But this is a big one. This is a big one on the left. Remember this. Remember that in MLK's speech, he said, you do not judge somebody by, I'm paraphrasing, don't judge someone by the color of the, judge them by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I've got a news flash for everybody on the left. He meant towards white people too. He meant that's the way that everybody is supposed to be dealing with one another. And he didn't say it was wrong to judge, which the left quite often tries to lead you to believe. Oh, don't judge. No, look at the MLK speech. He just changes the criteria of how you judge a person. You don't judge them by the color of your skin. He meant not judging people for being white as well. You judge them by the content of their character. This lady is acting as if she's doing that, except she never met Otto Warmbier, and she has no idea what his character was. She just threw him out there as a type. Next outrage, please.
Ivanka Trump must give a deposition in a lawsuit by an Italian shoemaker claiming her fashion label copied its designs. This is the Italian company Acquazzura.
All right, now this is an audio medium, and you can't see these pictures, although we have a Doctrine Digest, all the stories that we cover, plus many more, available at evhdoctrine.com or on your WSB radio app. And in this story, now this is going beyond politics, I have to tell you. I know Trumpers, that you're gonna think, oh, this is political.
Fake shoes.
This is political. Possible name for the podcast today, fake shoes. But you have to go and look at these two shoes side by side. And if Ivanka's shoe came after the first shoe, there's a good reason that the judge said she has to speak to this. I mean, there are a lot of, I don't buy shoes. I don't even buy my own shoes. My wife buys my clothes for me, and I say I like this one. I don't like shopping for clothes, and you can tell the way I walk around. So I only looked at this in this story. And if you, I just want to say to Trump fans, before you accuse this judge of doing this because he hates the Trump family, go look at the side-by-side comparison two shoes.
Yeah, there's a 2-millimeter difference in the heel size. Oh. You know, those 2 millimeters are a big deal.
There's that. And also the story, they show a few other items that are pretty close. And, you know, I don't know that Ivanka Trump is actually designing these things or how close she is. It's a name that's put on top of these things. But, you know, this Italian company probably has a case. I don't know if they have a winnable case, but I'm telling you, if I was that judge, I'd say, yeah, let's send this one on through and see what a jury would think. Next story.
Bill Cosby's going on a town hall tour.
Blip, 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 blip,
his publicist Andrew Wyatt recent announcement said that the comedian will be launching a town hall tour.
Is he a comedian still? I used to think of Bill Cosby as a comedian.
He's not so funny anymore.
Now I think of him as a serial rapist.
Alleged.
By 75 people. I'll give it to you.
Wasn't he America's dad at one point?
He was America's dad through most of my life, and he's let me down. That's why you sense the anger.
Well, people are outraged because they were saying that this tour was going to take care of, explaining to the kids the pitfalls of drinking and partying.
Well, now
you could get raped.
Well, they're backpedaling because at first the idea was he was going to go talk to young athletes and stuff about how to defend themselves against charges like this. Now they're saying no. He's going to talk to them about the dangers of, drinking and whatever. But he's going to do a Q&A with the audience. And if the question is asked, as if it's not going to be the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth question, he's actually calling them the Bill Cosby Town Halls, which you should be, kind of safe. Just don't...
don't drink the coffee.
I'm going to tell the kids. I can't do it.
If you don't want to get in trouble,
Tim Andrews is the best voice person I've ever known in my life. He's
thank you.
1,000 voices. Cannot get Bill Cosby down. He sounds Swedish. Do it again.
Would you like to have some coffee?
It's a Swedish chef. Sherby derby 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 derby
derby derby derby derby derby should not be doing town halls, shows. He's 80 or something. I mean, just, you had a good run. It didn't work out for you. You lived too long, Bill Cosby. You lived long enough that your sins of so many years mounted up and overwhelmed you. And he gets his day in court, and I understand that, and they're alleged. But when you have 50 different women essentially alleging the same thing, let's say 15 of them are lying, okay? You're still left with 35. There's no way to get around it. And really, in some of his depositions from earlier, he has pretty much said, yeah, he did this, but they knew I was going to do it. He wasn't saying that I didn't give him a pill. Any guy just doesn't have any confidence in himself. I'm going to give you a pill. Yeah.
Well, they won't laugh at him about certain things.
Oh, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't that funny behind the scenes.
Oh, not that funny. So next story.
I was going to say, the latest trial was a mistrial on Bill Cosby.
Yeah, and the reason on that one, I think, well, obviously the mistrial happened because they couldn't all agree, but there was an issue there where he did sign a deal in 2005, and supposedly this stuff was going to be closed and couldn't be used in future trials, and then they changed that at some point, and the legality of that, I'm not so sure about. So, next story.
All right, the outrageous Johnny Depp back in the news. His former business managers are saying that he did physically abuse his ex-wife, Amber Heard, and then tried to cover it up.
Yeah, there was that video a few months
back. He's in the kitchen. He's having a bad morning.
He throws wine at Amber Heard.
Pours himself the biggest wine glass ever, and then drinks it, and then throws the bottle into the sink.
Supposedly, he spends $16,000 a month on wine.
Well, you're Johnny Depp.
Well, that's a lot. Is he drinking?
Why I keep making those Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
You need more wine money.
That's right.
He was at Glastonbury Festival this weekend, talking about when was the last time an actor
assassinated
a president.
Yeah, he apologized for that. Yeah. But I mean, his problem is he's more enamored with Keith Richards than I am. He's actually trying to become Keith Richards.
I am, slowly but surely.
All right. We'll be back with one more outrage.
You got it.
Just a moment. That's right. Eric Von Hessler filling in for the great Herman Cain. English Nick is here with Outrages. Short segment. Let's try to fit one more outrage in.
Gwyneth Paltrow, you know her, a British actress.
Yeah, she doesn't really act so much anymore.
I use the term actress loosely.
Yeah, she's all about health and wellness.
Yeah, it's the Goop, right? The Goop is her company.
No, the Goop.
She's being called out by NASA for scamming her Goop customers with wellness stickers. You stick them on your arm or whatever.
Yeah, they're little stickers.
Yeah, they're meant to take care of any deficiencies you have.
Yeah, supposedly it realigns the balance of something in your whatever. And then they said that it was NASA material.
Right.
And NASA said,
And former NASA honcho Mark Shellhamer says, not only is the whole premise like snake oil, the logic doesn't even hold up.
Of course it doesn't. It's Goop, right, Gwyneth?
It's Goop. It's just like creams and
bombs and stickers that just kind of like reassess your cheek. Because my mom was on St. Elsewhere, so I know a lot about doctors.
Yeah, now what this thing is, NASA's saying that you're lying when you say that there's NASA material and NASA certified.
Not that NASA, the North American Stupidity Association.
Oh, you got the thumbs up from that NASA.
Thumbs up from them.
Yeah, the guy from NASA used a very technical term, Eric. BS.
Yes, it's complete BS. And by the way,
body shaming?
Anything having to do with wellness? You know, this idea that you put these stickers on, they show these women. How is it? Let me ask you a question. How is it that Gwyneth Paltrow can make money off of Goop? How be the same answer to why are there psychics who can still make a living? The answer is the same. Gullible women. Don't get me wrong. I'm not being a misogynist here. Not all women
sounds
are gullible.
It. Sounds it.
Well, not all women are gullible, just most. And gullible women.
Yeah.
Who, anybody, anytime you see the word's health is okay. Could be a little sketchy. You got to look into it. Wellness, always a fraud.
Why are you opposed to wellness?
Wellness. Well, I'm not opposed to actually being well. Huh. What I'm saying is that this is pseudoscience. This whole Goop thing is, it's just, this is just one product. What person, let's not just say woman, let's not be sexist here. What kind of person would actually believe that if you take little stickers and put them on your body, they will somehow realign your electromagnetic forces or whatever? Who would believe this nonsense?
But Eric, when you go to goop.com, that story is in between the definitive summer party dressing guide and three probiotic-packed breakfast ideas. How could you not click on it and use it?
Probiotic, by the way.
24 stickers for $120.
That's it. It's very affordable.
Doesn't do anything. Now, to prove that not only women are gullible, there are many gullible men. I remember a few years ago, it's not so big now, but remember that thing in Major League Baseball where everybody was wearing those stupid necklaces, those rope necklaces?
Yes!
Supposedly, that somehow changed the magnetic balance of their body. And also, there's still a phone sex chat line, so we know there are plenty of gullible men out there.
And we bought Enzyte.
Yes, exactly. Gullible men are out there, but Gwyneth Paltrow, she caters to the high-end gullible woman. So if you buy it, you deserve it. English Nick, back to the river. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more headlines. Welcome back, Eric Von Hessler. This is the Von Hessler Doctrine. We're filling in for the great Herman Cain. The other voices you hear are the doctrinaires. We did headlines, so let's now do this.
More headlines.
Insane. There are more headlines. Jared Yamamoto is here to feed me more headlines.
And this is right from USA Today.
Oh, well, then you know it's good.
Three?
The only newspaper that people actually see anymore, because if you're ever in a hotel, you get it for free, right?
Get it for free there and at the airport. It's always at the coffee stand when you're walking around.
I prefer the AJC, mind you.
Agreed. Three veteran CNN journalists with impressive investigative credentials have resigned after their story on Russian ties to Trump failed to meet reporting standards.
You know, it goes more than that. CNN changed their, I don't know if they changed their standards, but they put out a memo that said something along the lines of, nobody goes with a Russian story anymore unless they get it. This is here. No one, this is from the executive editor, Rich Barbary. No one should publish any content involving Russia without coming to me and the CNN vice president first. And the reason is this thing is imploding so big. You know, I what's it been, a year and a half?
Feels like it.
I think it's been. I think it feels like it because it's been a year and a half that they've been looking for collusion between the Trump team and Russia, and there's just nothing there. And CNN has been getting their ratings for them, I guess, have been higher while they go after Trump. And what's happened is, up to now, there's been a license for anybody to make any allegation because it's the fuel on which CNN is thriving at the moment. But they got smacked last week. Remember, the day before Comey, not last week, a couple weeks ago, the day before Comey testified, CNN had a story that said that Comey was going to refute the fact that he had ever told the president that he wasn't under investigation. And the next day he shows up and he says, no, the president was absolutely correct. Three times I told him he wasn't under investigation. So that stings if you're a news organization. It's getting to the point now where they are starting to become embarrassed because it's becoming rather obvious that while there were Russian shenanigans in general with the election, there was no collusion between Trump himself and probably not even between any of the underlings. That was always the question. One of these underlings try to impress the boss by doing something they shouldn't do. Michael Flynn is still a problem that's out there, but I think CNN is starting to realize this is not going to be history. You know, on MSNBC, maybe a month ago, I can't remember which one of these breaking news stories pushed them to it, but they had a guy on the air, went on and said, this has now reached Watergate level. I mean, that was a month ago. Nothing more happens. So they're starting to look pretty stupid, and I think we'll have to look at the coverage on CNN as we go forward, but I think there's going to be a little less play on the Russia story. They still hate Trump, and they've got the CBO, and they can concentrate on... Look,
that's looking, all you've seen
I'm
all
looking
morning.
At the monitor right now. CBO, 22 million fewer insured by 2026 under Senate bill. There's a second part of that sentence that's not in that little thing, which is that we save $320 billion. Now, look, you can still argue about it, but both things are true. The CBO said both things. So they feel they've got plenty of fuel to continue to whatever anti-Trump ratings they're feeling, that they can get that without being absolutely historically wrong. By the way, you say these three guys who resigned, they were well-respected, and one of them because he was up for a Pulitzer Prize.
It said impressive investigative credentials is what the headline on USA Today says.
Yeah, because the Pulitzer Prize, that's basically when you do an expose and show how terrible capitalism is. That's the way you get Pulitzer. Nobody ever got a Pulitzer Prize explaining capitalism and the great things that it's done. It's never happened before, so I'm not so sure about that. Is there more ratings? I know what's coming next, and you know that I am the...
Yeah, it's your favorite show, Sunday Night with Megyn Kelly. And unfortunately, Eric, it continued its downward trajectory in the Sunday overnight ratings this week with the new NBC news series slipping to a new low in both the 25-54 demo and overall numbers.
I warned of this so long ago. Megyn Kelly, a mediocre talent who somehow jumped on the back of Donald Trump and somehow convinced NBC to give her $20 million. She's losing. Not only is she losing to 60 Minutes, the direct copy. Oh, she's so good. We're going to put her up against 60 Minutes because everybody loves Megyn Kelly. No, most people have never heard of her, but everybody loves Megyn. She's not only losing to 60 Minutes and reruns of 60 Minutes, she's losing to reruns. I could understand if they were, you know, new shows. Reruns of America's Funniest Home Videos.
That's still on the air.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. At least reruns are.
Okay.
And Megyn, this is the same thing that CBS did years ago when they brought
Katie Couric
in to do the 6:30 news, the CBS Evening News. Oh, Katie Couric, she's one. No, she was on a show that was popular. The Today Show was popular. She was on it. There's a difference whether you drive it or whether you're on it. And they put her at 6:30. They even put Walter Cronkite's voice. Welcome to the CBS Evening News with Katie Couric. He was still alive then. They brought in his voice. Nothing could help because she was never actually popular with people. Megyn Kelly... You would have thought last year when she was making this move that everyone was talking about Megyn Kelly. It's good for her. She made $20 million. But you know how it is in the hallways of media places. I've been on top and I've been everywhere in between and down below. I guarantee you that she was walking around. She was walking around like the queen bee for about 3 or 4 months before this thing went on the air. And now she probably still wears sunglasses and slips through the hallway to get to her office because this is ugly. And this is not the end product. She's supposed to have a daytime show.
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah, now is that going to be daytime, or is it going to be Ellen daytime, afternoon? I don't know.
I'm assuming they would have to find
something.
I told
you this would fail. I will guarantee you that will fail. Megyn Kelly is an okay reporter. She's not that great. So
I thought she was replacing Hoda and Kathy Lee.
Oh, that's what it is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but Eric...
They actually got good, decent ratings.
Yeah.
Set up there, and I don't know why.
Well, people like to watch older women drinking wine.
I guess it works, especially at 9 o'clock in the morning. So her ratings, whatever their ratings are, I guarantee you, her ratings will not get there.
And Eric, didn't you not see last Sunday again? They were talking about how the penguins are being affected by climate change with Megyn Kelly's voice behind it.
Oh, I know. And you know, you get to the second week. The first week with Putin was kind of a bomb, but she had her best ratings, I think, so far. Then the next week, they had this big old deal with Alex Jones, and it was usually controversy and people being angry means somebody will tune in, but fool me once, shame on you, I think, is the thing here. And nobody tuned in week two, even with all of the controversy that was going on. And then this week she had nobody's on, some doctor talking about something. And then, the climate change, the penguins. Yeah, the penguins. Yeah, it's important. And the penguin that I'm aware of was evil. less penguins, not more penguins, if that is any example of the kind of social conscience you get from your average penguin. So, yeah, just one more time. I don't know why I just... You know, when I got knocked out of my last job, until Pete Spriggs called me, I couldn't get a call. You know, only successful on the radio in the market since 1998. And people like this out of nothing, they are awarded $20 million because everybody's going to love Megyn Kelly.
She stood up to a bully. That's worth $20 million.
Well, then you need to tune in. Actually, for all of my criticism of Megyn Kelly, I don't think that question to Donald Trump was inappropriate. I think it was okay. But that didn't make her a superstar, somebody that people wanted to watch. It was a question that anybody could have asked. It wasn't that insightful to ask that question. Next story.
Google has been hit with a record-breaking antitrust fine from the European Union.
Well, what is that? I love his reportage. Google's been hit with something. Eric, your thoughts?
So this is a $2.7 billion fine for unfairly favoring some of its own services over those of rival services.
I love it. If you don't like socialism, and what they have in the European Union is what they call social democracy, democratic socialism, something like that. We don't go all the way. This is all you need to know here. The big tech companies, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, I would throw in there, Tesla. How many of them came out of the European Union? None. Nobody over there in the European Union actually sat around one day, had an idea that they then turned into and executed into a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar business. So the parasitical places like the European Union don't have the ability to create these companies, so what do? Oh, we'll take money from you, so we'll continually fine you with judgments and take money from you. And then let's look at why they got the fine. So basically, when you go on Google and you look for shopping comparisons, what they found was Google favored their own stuff or liaisons that they had with other advertisers over people who didn't have
deals
with Google.
And why would they do that, Eric?
Well, I mean, if you were in Walmart, do you expect to find... Usually, if you're in Walmart, they're telling you how there are great deals in Walmart. Ever been to a Walmart and say, hey, wait a second, you can get these pants for $3 cheaper over at Target. This is what they're asking Google to do. Because they're so successful, they're supposed to, at some point, stop being self-interested and become a utility for the world. I don't see that at all. Hey, people buy from Amazon as well. There is competition. There are a lot of Amazon sells, you know, if you're looking for a monopoly on anything, which I wouldn't do it to Amazon either, but you've got an argument there. A little bit of an argument there. People do have choices. This is just the European Union knowing that they will never create anything as great as Google. So let's come up with reasons to force them to give us a whole bunch of cash so that they can continue to sell their products to our people. That's all this is. Why should Google, on their platform, be like Santa Claus in Miracle on 34th Street? Oh, you know, they have these skates cheaper down at Gimbel's.
Go to Yahoo.
Why? Why is there? Because it's seen not as their product or their platform, but now you're a utility. They're not a utility. They're a company. They've got products to sell. And the EU is parasitical. So they can't. When you can't create, you tax the people who do. All right, even more headlines when we return. How about that? Yes, Eric Von Hessler, in for the great Herman Cain. Now, Jared Yamamoto, my producer, is dying to talk about three-on-three basketball, and I promised him I would allow him to. What is this, Ice Cube's League?
Yeah, this is Ice Cube's League, and over 15,000 people watched the first game ever in New York at the Barclays Center on Sunday afternoon, and this is awesome. It's got a bunch of the former old All-Stars coming back to play. There is a four-point play, which I've been saying for years needs to happen in the NBA because everybody's so freaking good now.
Yeah. Well, it's also half court, so it's a little bit different four-point. You don't have, there's no real setup. You're just going to make a decision to make a four. They look like there's, I've seen the number four is on the floor.
Yeah, it's
so
awesome.
I think you have to be in that circle. Am I right? You have to be in one of those four circles, the circle with the number four, in order for that to count as a four-pointer. Dr. J's involved. What about and it's a traveling thing, right? They run, I think what happens is, like at the Barclays Center, you see two or three different games.
Correct.
Between different teams. So the whole thing travels to your city, right? As opposed to the way the league is, where you have your own team and you watch other teams come through. So it's kind of a traveling road show.
Kind of like a Harlem Globetrotters thing. A little bit.
I think it has possibility. There's going to be 3-on-3 in the next Summer Olympics. Did you know that? Basketball.
Yes, and that is such a good
LeBron
thing.
LeBron has said he won't play, so.
Well, of course. Well, yeah. Why would he? I mean, he's proven himself.
I think this has got potential. I would check it out. What I want to know is how come Dennis Rodman isn't involved? you seem to jump on anything.
I'm holding out. I got let me wear my popcorn t-shirt. Also, I called my good friend Kim Jong-un, and he said I should hold out for a little more money.
Is he basically, Kim Jong-un, is he basically your agent now? He makes your deals for you?
That's right. He's working as my agent right now. He's taking care of all my business needs.
Just do me a favor and say basketball diplomacy.
Basketball diplomacy.
Yeah, just say it again.
Basketball diplomacy.
One more time.
All right, basketball diplomacy. If you want it again, it's $20,000.
Okay, Kim Jong-un, he drives a hard deal, a mean deal.
Yeah, he does.
I think you should get involved in this. 3-on-3, you're the rebound king. I think this is perfect.
No, let me wear my popcorn shirt.
Yeah, we got to wear the popcorn shirt. What is popcorn, Dennis Rodman?
I don't know.
Eric.
They're people who pay you to wear a shirt.
All I know is that they gave me a shirt which says popcorn, and then they give me a check.
Okay.
That's the end of my influence.
So, Jared, you're interested in this because this is the game we play in the backyard, right?
Listen, I think we should do a Von Hessler Doctrine 3-on-3 tournament. This is something that I haven't talked about
Not
yet.
Unless you want the host to die.
Oh, you'll be fine. Come on, guys. We can all do this.
This is how people die. You're sedentary for years, and then you decide to go out and... I'm going to spend all day playing basketball. That's how people die.
Ice Cube's in the Atlanta area all the time. He could get us to come out there and play, make a little money. And
Dr. J is an old-timer who's a coach.
Yeah.
I'm an old-timer when it comes to Atlanta radio. I will be a coach. But if you want to do a 3-on-3 thing, that's fine. But I'm going to be the coach. I'm not going to be out there.
What if you had Chauncey Billups and Mike Bibby on your team?
I would still be the coach because I want to live. But I think there's something to this 3-on-3. It might actually work out. We'll see in the Summer Olympics.
The four-point play is what I think is so needed.
Well, that's really what we need in the NBA. I know this isn't a sports show, but this is not what we need in the NBA. The game is already – there's nothing going on in the paint anymore. I grew up in NBA basketball. Almost everything happened inside the paint or was driven to the paint. And now people are just, you want to pull it out even more?
Can't have their property getting hurt.
That's what it is. Your big stars don't want to go down in the paint anymore. It's a pansies game, I tell you. It's not the game I grew up with. All right, I don't know what we're doing here next. We're either going to do WTF or we're going to do Georgia stuff. Oh, I just heard WTF with Autumn Fisher when we return. Welcome back. I'm Eric Von Hessler. This is the Von Hessler Doctrine. We're filling in for the great Herman Cain. The other voices you hear are the doctrinaires. Before we get to WTF, Jared, there's one thing we haven't covered. Karen Handel, what happened? She was sworn in last night.
She was. She was sworn in. She is a congresswoman now. Congresswoman Handel.
What an extraordinary privilege that the people of the 6th District have given me. So I'm very excited and honored. I look forward to serving the people of the 6th District, to serving the people of Georgia.
She looks forward to that. John Ossoff, what were you doing last night? She's a congresswoman now.
Last night I went to Brewster's and had some peanut butter ice cream. And I look forward to having more ice cream and then possibly running for something in the future that I've yet to determine.
Oh,
well, that's sweet.
Isn't that sweet, Karen?
That's so cute. Y'all got some ice cream?
Yes, and I even got some sprinkles because I want the ice cream to be held accountable to me.
Did you get on that sugar cone?
I did. Yes, I like the sugar cone, and also I like riding in the back seat.
You know, it occurs to me, John, that she's going to be staffing up pretty good, and you need a job. Maybe Karen can give you a job in her office.
That's right, if you play your cards right.
Well, I definitely know where to find discounted office chairs.
That's what I
those
wanted.
We don't need any more chair. We got some really beautiful high back mesh.
Well, you overpaid for them.
Just as a joke, if I was Karen Handel, I would pretend that the first thing that I was going to do as Congresswoman from the state of Georgia, from the Congressional District 6, is buy a bunch of new chairs, because that's what I do.
New chairs for everybody. I'm like Oprah.
Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for welcoming me so graciously. God bless you. God bless the great state of Georgia, and God bless the great United States of America. Thank you.
Hear, hear. Let's do this.
What the?
Seriously, what the?
WTF with Autumn Fisher.
That's right. Now get your, I know that we're filling in for Herman. Not many people have been exposed to our WTF. I want you to get your minds out of the gutter because it stands for What the Fun and Games. So Autumn, what the fun and games?
So the new Star Wars movie, Han Solo.
Han
Solo. What did I say? Han?
You said Han Solo.
Oh, Han Solo. He's so handsome.
Han Solo.
The original directors, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who directed movies like 21 Jump Street and the Lego Movie, have been fired. And yeah. Ron Howard is taking over.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Ron Howard, the guy who did Beautiful Mind.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope.
We got to nip Han Solo in the bud. Nip it in the bud. Right, Otis?
There's going to be a new theme song, which I don't know if people are going to be digging very much.
Ooh, Lando Calrissian's in our town.
He's
gonna bring that hometown feel to Star Wars.
Apparently, the guys that were doing it, they're known for their humor, and I think that they the Star Wars franchise people weren't digging the fact that there was a lot of. It was becoming a comedy, I guess.
Well, Han Solo character is humorous and he's sarcastic, and I don't see why that would be an issue.
A lot of people love these two guys, and they love their work, but, you know, when you're dealing with Disney and what they want from a franchise deal, you kind of do what you're told, I think. They decide whether or not it's going to, or what the feel of the movie is going to be. Now, bringing in Ron Howard, I just want to say one thing. I don't know if people have thought about this, but I have. I think about Ron Howard a lot. And it occurs to me, and I don't hear people writing about this, so Ron Howard has got to be 70 or in his 60s. He's in his 60s at least. Ron Howard, I believe, if you think about it, is the most successful Hollywood career ever. Ron Howard has been working in Hollywood since he was 2 years old. I think he did a commercial when he was 2 years old. He was on Andy Griffith when he's like four or five. He was the son in the movie Courtship of Eddie's Father. And then you move forward from there to American Graffiti, then Happy Days, then directing some huge movies, Apollo 13, still directing today, and now is going to take over the Han Solo movie. And it's got to be in his deep 60s. Anybody got a machine? Is there a machine?
He's 63 years old.
63 years old. Okay, 63 years old. He has had a successful Hollywood career since he was 2. Is there anyone else who is... And there's never been a downside for Ron. There's never been like the years where Ron Howard goes to rehab and talks about it. He's never had... He had a couple of movies in the last few years that kind of tanked on him. But he always gets work. He's always working. And I think it's time. This is why I think about Ron Howard so much more than other people.
Wouldn't you think about Bryce Dallas Howard? Come on.
Bryce Dallas Howard is his daughter.
Very beautiful young lady. Actress.
And
very
he has great. A beautiful brother as well. Clint Howard.
He's great.
Lovely. What was he in? Gentle Ben?
Gentle Ben and then every Ron Howard movie.
Yeah, he didn't play the bear, did he? He played the kid who liked the bear, right?
Yeah, right.
Gentle Ben. So I think it's time that people acknowledge that Ron Howard is the most successful Hollywood star ever. It's not even close. Get him on. Get an interview with him. I want to talk to Ron Howard. There's not many people that I want to talk to, but I want to talk to Ron Howard. I want to know if Ron Howard actually remembers walking with the fishing pole with Andy Griffith next to him for the titles, or if he just knows it because he sees it Like, do you actually have a memory of that day? This guy, you can't do any better than Ron Howard.
Yeah, and for those...
Now, if he's right for this job, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. People that think that Han Solo shouldn't be serious haven't seen those new two movies that have come out for Star Wars. Rogue One, very dark, very serious.
Right,
and then even Star Wars Episode 7, a little darker than the usual one. So I think this is a good fit.
So maybe. Has Ron Howard ever made a movie like this before?
Not that I know of.
I don't know. I mean, Apollo 13 was huge, but it wasn't this kind of movie.
Right.
So he can handle it, I suppose. I hope, but he's made a couple of movies in the last few years. He made one about the Formula One, and I love racing, and I love Formula One, and I was aware of the story, and it's a cool story, and the movie put me to sleep. It was horrible. So he doesn't always make great movies. And then he made the other one about the whale and the boat, but it wasn't Moby Dick. Like last year, do you remember that one? What was that one called?
Dobie Mick?
I don't know what it was, but it was kind of a twist on the story of Moby Dick, but it was another one that just went nowhere. But
Ishmael.
No, it was not called Call Me Ishmael. I can't remember what it was called.
Not Free Willy.
Next story. Not Free Willy.
A California father accidentally buried the wrong person. He thought he was burying his son. His son was this homeless person who they said they identified behind a cell phone store. They checked his fingerprints. They said it was his son. They buried him. They spent like $20,000 on this funeral. It turns out it's not him.
So after they went through the whole funeral, they get a phone call from the state. By the way, your son is still alive.
It was someone called and said, hey, your son's alive. And he said, put my son on the phone. He's like, hey, Dad. That was it. He was alive.
So this is why I'm going to be cremated, by the way. I'll have you know. Because I know you have another story coming up about Salvador Dali. Believe me, cremation is the way to go because they can't dig you back up. I guess this guy's not going to be dug back up, but I like the idea of finality.
Well, I think they are because they buried him like next to his mother.
All right, so they're going to dig the guy up and they're going to put him somewhere else.
Potter's Field.
So it sounds like a sad story, actually. Like the kid has the mental problem and he's on the streets, homeless. So the parents hadn't seen him in a while. And it's not difficult to believe that story, right? Your son was found dead.
No, not at all.
Behind a cell
store. They said that they saw his face at during the wake.
Mm-hmm.
And he touched his head and was very sad. And he thought, I don't know what my dead son looks like. He looks like...
Okay. I guess he changed a lot. Maybe they haven't seen him in years. Well, it's a sad story.
Right, and being homeless and then being dead. I mean, you know.
It's a sad story, but nothing could be done. It's not like you're going to change any rules or anything. It happened once in a gazillion years. What are you going to do? It's hard. Right. So,
and it's not that sad. It's just his son's alive.
It was his son's alive to go back to the street and not be in any contact with the family. It's
kind of
sad.
So.
Sad story all the way around. Was the other guy a homeless guy?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, it was this guy, and then where's his parents?
It's a hobo mix-up is what happened there. Mm-hmm. I think you can't blame the state for that. Next story.
That was Ron Howard's movie you were thinking of. Hobo mix-up.
Hobo mix-up. Very funny, but he can't bring that sort of humor to
wacky
the Han Solo.
Comedy. There was a slide whistle.
That makes it funny. Next story.
Salvador Dali, I'll do that story. His body is ordered to be exhumed in a paternity suit.
Again. So somebody is claiming, she's like in her 60s, somebody is claiming that she is the daughter of Salvador Dali because her mom always told her that she was a nanny or something close to somebody else in the family and she had an affair with Salvador Dali. By the way, millennials, look it up. He's a surrealist painter. I just saw Jared Yamamoto.
I know who
Salvador Dali is.
Google.
You know, the clocks bent, melting over the trees. That's Salvador Dali.
Funny story, actually.
Funny story.
Yeah, no, somebody.
Oh, hold on a second. All right. Okay, Jared says he's got a funny story.
Oh, it's not that funny. Now that you put the pressure on me like that.
Okay.
I had a friend of mine that whose grandfather had an original piece of Salvador Dali's art, and he introduced it to his girlfriend and said, look at this. And she had no idea who Salvador Dali was. And that's the story there.
Man, that was funny.
That is hilarious. Oh, hold on, let me catch my breath.
Can you tell it again?
You tell that at cocktail parties?
Sure, absolutely.
That is, look, the crowd can't even stop. They're
so
rumbling.
So one time a girl I know didn't know who an artist was.
Now I jumped the gun. This is the story of it, to say this is why I'm going to be cremated, because you'd be down there for, he's been dead since 89 or something.
89,
he's been down there the whole time. Then they're going to dig him up, and that ain't going to look like Salvador Dali. That ain't going to be the Salvador Dali that I remember.
That mustache is going to be even longer, right? Because they say your nails and your hair keep growing.
Yeah, that's right. He's going to have a longer mustache. It's just not going to
be all curly.
He was very into his own brand. For some, the allegation here is my mom told me, and they're going to dig him up. Have yourself cremated, you know, and you know me.
Well, go ahead.
Well, there's a reason they call me the Doctor of Traveling Love. Of course, for many years, a port in every storm, I was traveling the country. And who knows? Who knows what could pop up after I die? So, I am going to be cremated, and no one is going to get my money. As a matter of fact, if I have any money left on the day that I die, I want to be buried with it. As a matter of fact...
Oh, like a king in Egypt.
Except here's the difference. You put all my money in there with me, and then you burn all of it. You cremate all of it, so no one can have it. Can't have it? Make it yourself. Oh, I'm his daughter. What did you ever do for his money? Make your own money. Leave the dead alone. Haven't you seen Poltergeist? All right, we have more WTF when we return. Can't you hear me knocking? Eric Von Hessler filling in for the great Herman Cain. Short segment. So, Autumn Fisher, you have one more WTF story?
Yeah, sure. So, parents believe that there's a new Snapchat feature that puts their kids in danger. It shares their location to their friends. But sometimes with Snapchat, your friends aren't really your friends.
That's true. Snapchat. No, I'm not on the Snapchat. Also, proudly, not on Twitter. We are on Facebook. I stay there, but proudly not on Twitter. I just want anybody to know, if anybody is talking to you on Twitter as Eric Von Hessler, it ain't me, because we ain't on Twitter. I am not on Twitter. WSB's on Twitter. Jared's on Twitter because he's a millennial. I'm not on Twitter. And I'm certain.
I'm on Twitter. You can find me at AutoPritz, P-R-I-T-T-S.
Well, there you go. There you go. But you're on Snapchat. You're on all these things. I don't know Snapchat. I don't understand it, so I've never been on it.
No, I tried to be cool, and I downloaded Snapchat, but I didn't know how to use it. I didn't know what was going on.
Same here. I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, it's for 12-year-olds,
oh,
right?
Oh, come on, guys. We'll Snapchat right now.
Oh, we're not going to Snapchat right now. This is called SnapMap.
Yes,
that map.
And so what's the idea here? So your friends, I mean, if it's not going to be something nefarious, if it's working the way that it's supposed to work, then your friends would know that you're in the area, right? That's the idea.
Right.
Hey, all my friends are around. And if you already have a phone, couldn't you just call your friends and tell them that you're...
Right, and just say, hey, where are you at, boo?
My friend.
I really appreciate you letting us know where you are. If you need a ride, I'll be there.
Yeah, I got to agree with many parents that it's probably not a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea.
I think it's a great idea.
I know you think it's a good idea. It's probably not a great idea in terms of parentage, yes.
Yeah, but the promotional video that Snapchat sent out when this update was made showed, it's like, oh, look, Kelly and Ginger are over there at the movie theater. What show are they seeing?
Kelly and Ginger, you say?
exactly. That guy right there.
And so
that doesn't make sense either, because you could just check these kids' Twitter and be like, going to the movies with whoever and Ginger.
Yeah, I suppose, but by having a map that shows you where this person is, and you know what, we're joking around, it's creepy, but I mean, we also have a lot of stalking and things like that. You could have teenage girls who broke up with a guy who can't deal with it, and now he's able to follow where the person is, but I'm a libertarian, I don't believe in passing laws against this stuff, but I think it is smart you know what, I just changed. If you're a libertarian, I just changed. I am now an orthodox something. I want to be as far away from you as possible.
Can you imagine the clicky groups in high school? Like, they're look at this group on SnapMap. They're all at the Dollar Theater. Or, oh, look at them. They're all over here.
Or
doing something.
If it's me in school, I'm always trying to avoid the guy who wants to fight me.
Yeah,
and now
you're
just advertising.
Oh,
I can meet him at the... Well, when I was a kid, it was like Orange Julius or something. But kids don't go to the mall anymore, right? I mean, malls don't exist anymore for the most part.
Not really.
And millennials, they don't go to the malls.
But the cool thing about this feature, though, is that you can turn your location settings off on Snapchat. Just
but
make sure that
you have to turn them off. That's the default? Is the default on or off?
Yeah, with the new update, the default's on.
See, that's all they need to change. You got to make a change to where you actually have to turn it on. You'll still have people getting in trouble.
But even a notice would come up and say, hey, do you want to see where your friends are? And do you want to know, you want to tell your friends where you are? And kids are like, heck yeah, that sounds awesome.
This all goes back to parents need to be able to, do a better job of taking care of their kids. But, in America, that's not going to happen. So we're all going to ask for somebody to pass a law so that we can feel like we're better parents.
And if you don't have the location services on, you don't get the best geotags, Eric.
Oh,
you need your geotags.
You're talking to a man who took himself off Twitter. Can I tell you, since leaving Twitter, my blood pressure has dropped tremendously. Not having to check it, not look at it. Fantastic. Get off Twitter. It's a cesspool. Snapchat is for 12-year-olds. What's the matter with you?
Everyone has an opinion, but he's got the Von Hessler Doctrine. Eric Von Hessler on WSB.
Live from Sherwood Forest, hour 3 of this special edition of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins now. I am your lovable host, Eric Von Hessler. You are listening to the fastest growing radio show in America. Doctrinaires mostly are here. Man of a thousand voices, Tim Andrews, still with us.
Hello.
Handsomest producer in all of producery, Jared Yamamoto, is with us.
Good morning.
Why hour 3? Because this is our third hour. Where have you been? We've been in for Herman the first 2 hours. Now here we are, situated in our own time slot. I feel so comfortable. Let's do this.
Even more headlines.
Yes, we had headlines. Then more headlines. Now the ultimate freakout. Even more headlines. Jared Yamamoto.
Yeah, this story comes straight from the Von Hessler Doctrine's favorite survey source, Wallet Hub.
Yes, these are the people. You got to give it to them. I don't know who they are, but they get that name in the news. Aren't they? We figured out last time there's some sort of financial services.
They deal with a lot of banks.
But this is a smart thing they do, is they do a bunch of surveys, and they know that there are radio shows like this that need we need content, right? So they give you a survey about your city, and you have to use it, and it's brilliant. I don't know what they do at Wallet Hub, some sort of financial services, but if you ever open a business, if you want to get your name in the news all the time, do surveys. And make people feel good about themselves, I guess.
Well, this latest survey says, of the nation's 100 most populated cities, only one was deemed the best for the 4th of July. Can you guess it, Eric?
Well, I'm guessing because they want my money for whatever it is they do. They said Atlanta.
That's right, it is Atlanta.
Because I live in Atlanta, and that would make me feel good, and so therefore I would have a positive view of the people at Wallet Hub and whatever it is they do.
And they base this calculation on 5 key dimensions.
Okay, 5 key dimensions.
Celebrations.
I thought there were only 3 dimensions. Remember the 5th dimension? They were good. The 5th dimension, yes.
So we've got celebrations, affordability.
What does that mean? Celebrations.
Celebrations.
The best house parties in the country.
Right. So that would be most of the, that would be like.
And the Lenox Mall thing.
The Lenox Mall, Dunwoody, Peachtree City, all different places.
Sure.
Affordability.
Uh-huh. What is that? I don't know what that means.
I guess for the fireworks, right? Because now fireworks are legal here.
Sparklers are cheaper in Georgia.
That's right. So, yeah, we get our own fireworks now. That's okay.
Then we've got attractions.
Okay.
Activities. And then safety and accessibility for 4th of July weather. So the weather's usually pretty good for 4th of July.
I think this is all baloney. I mean, I'm not saying they aren't good in Atlanta. It's fine. But the idea that this is the best 4th of July, it's a good town. It's a good town for all things, right? It's a good town for 4th of July. I'm not going to be in town this 4th of July.
Why not?
I will not know, no matter how good. Because this is my first week of vacation since becoming a weekday host here at WSB is the first week of July. So I'll be ringing in the 4th of July in a very patriotic way in sandals with a beer in my hand. In Sarasota, Florida.
So Wallet Hub ranked Atlanta as a 78% out of all those different categories I talked about. What is the Von Hessler grade for Atlanta's 4th of July
celebration? Well, here's the thing. I'm not much for going to see. I'm not much on 4th of July. What I find is, even the best celebrations, I got to deal with parking, and I've got to deal with, walking. So what I
people.
Do. People. People, yes. What I do is I watch the fireworks on TV, usually, and I turn up the sound, get the surround sound going, and get the effect. So I don't really go to these things. And in Sarasota, I'll probably just be sitting out by the bay.
You burn something so you get that smell?
Yeah, get that burning leaf smell right. That I love so much. And to try to start a fire, I put it out. I have the whole 4th of July thing. 4th of July is more dangerous than I thought. I'm a libertarian, right? So I'm for fireworks for sale and everything. But a couple years ago, the way that my children were, and the other kids around the neighborhood, the way they were handling the fireworks, it's amazing they all have all of their fingers left, honestly. They are explosives. You know, you do have to be careful. You do have to be careful. So I won't be in Atlanta, so you'll have to tell me whether we lived up to the Wallet Hub ranking this year.
Well, you'll be happy to know, too, your old hometown, Buffalo, ranked in the top.
It was never my hometown.
Well, not your hometown, but you love the Buffalo Bills because you grew up loving them.
Yes.
So I figured I'd let you know that Buffalo ranked third on this list.
We got the best up here.
Oh, what do you got going on? What's going on this year for 4th of July in Buffalo, Buffalo Bill?
We're going to be going by a lake there. We're going to have fireworks display up there. Now, don't go get your own. First of all, they're illegal. Second of all, they're very dangerous, and we got people who know how to handle them, the fire department.
Now, my friends in Western New York are always interested in the food. How's the food going
to
be?
Oh, we're going to go down to Rochester, Nick Tahoe's, and get some garbage plates and bring them up here, and we're going to eat them, and then everybody's getting Speedies, and then we're going to wash it down with some Labatt's. It's going to be fantastic. I know it's Canadian, but, you know.
This is a stupid survey. 4th of July is as good as the party you're at. It doesn't matter where you're at. Next story.
The city of Atlanta has agreed not to enforce an ordinance that requires street artists to obtain a series of approvals to retain murals that already exist or to paint new pieces of artwork.
So they caved.
They did.
The city of Atlanta caved to these dirty, horrible mural. I hate murals. You know this about me. I cannot stand murals on the sides of walls in cities. It's just not my kind of art. Now, this pertains to people. This isn't graffiti, right? These are people who want a mural painted on the side of their
building.
You ever been down to Krog Street and walk around, see all those cool murals by different artists on the wall?
No, they're not cool. It's like tattoo art. There's nothing about it impressive to me. It all kind of looks the same, and it's always some sort of leftist propaganda. Again, there's never any mural that highlights the successes of capitalism. You ever see that mural? I've never seen that mural.
No.
It doesn't exist. It's always like, it's like art that you would find in a shop in Jamaica somewhere or something.
T-shirt art.
That's what it is. It's t-shirt art.
Now, would you rather look at a blank Soviet-style wall and just, live in that third world or that old Eastern European look or see some color?
Oh, it's I guess you think it's like funky, right?
And
it's,
it is.
It makes the city cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an old man. I just think that mural art is just crap art. It just doesn't stand out. It's always a hodgepodge of different things that are supposedly good for the community. I don't care about the good of the community, so it's not my kind of art.
Check out.
Is there any about the good of me? Is there me anywhere? If I ever showed up on any city mural art, until I do, I'm against it.
I'm going to do one. The Eric Von Hessler mural. I'll do it in Cabbage Town. Now, there's a guy in town named Mr. Jert who's fantastic. So if you,
well, why doesn't he get a palette? Why doesn't he get, do it? Why does he have to do it on the side of buildings?
Because it's cool.
And why does it always have to be like the sun is rising and Martin Luther King is holding hands with a little girl, and then there's a swing set, and then for no reason there's a dragon or something? Nothing makes sense in these murals.
Hey, they got Abe Lincoln with an afro down in Cabbage Town, so you go check that out.
That's pretty awesome, actually. I would check that out. Next story.
That three-eyed cat is really popular in Midtown, too.
I'll bet it is. If they're such great artists, why don't they paint and then sell it?
They do.
What, to the person who owns the building?
No. They do some miniaturized versions. They have it's a whole cottage industry, and then they do Free Art Friday, where they put it around the city, and you got a geocache.
You know, that's why I live in the sterile suburbs. because I don't like that kind of
thing. I think you're triggered by this, Eric. Yeah.
I'm not triggered. I don't buy this. There's certain kinds of art that now, I mean, I have this argument with my kids all the time. They don't have tattoos, but it's like, oh no, there's some beautiful tattoo art. No, there isn't. It's all the same. It all looks like the kind of stuff you'd see on a leather wallet, you know? and you're only dealing with, you know, a certain number of colors, and then people will say, oh, well, you got to look down my whole arm, man. It's my life story. I'm not that interested in you. Your life story is really interesting to you, but I really don't care about your great grandma. I got to tell you. So I don't think it's interesting art. I've never looked at a mural in a city and just been stopped and wowed. It just looks like it was put together by kids with sidewalk chalk to me. That's the way it is to me. Anyway, next story.
Our UN
ambassador. You're not going to convince me, so you better move on.
All right. Our UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, says she and her son were booed at a New York restaurant during the Gay Pride Weekend parade last weekend.
So because she's a Republican and
of course
she's a...
from the South.
She's linked to Trump. Yeah, but it's like, do these people recognize that they're booing the Republican governor who ordered the Confederate flag not to be flown in South Carolina? Are they aware of that? Is there any nuance or just any connection to Trump means that you hate everybody and you need to be booed? Again, we talked about this earlier. These are the same people who demand safe spaces and you can't trigger them. But when they don't like you, it's not only okay to micro, but macro aggression is encouraged. Because, you see, the people who are booing, they know how much more enlightened and how much better they are as human beings than Nikki Haley. They're so much better than she is. And so they're so much more progressive that they have the right to let her know that she's totally wrong, everything about her. I bet you nobody who is booing her knows that she signed the order to bring down the Confederate flag in South Carolina. I'm guessing that they didn't know that. Also, for all of the stuff that Trump has said about different people, I understand why Hispanics and all of that. When is he? I do not get the animosity from the gay lobby, the LGBTQ, add whatever letter you want to. I don't understand what it is that Donald Trump said. When he was accepting his nomination at the Republican convention, he had a whole piece in there about protecting gays and they got a round of applause, and then he thanked people.
Thank you for applauding that.
So he actually said that, yeah. Which is that there's never been a Republican nominee who stood in front of a Republican convention and said anything about how gay rights need to be observed. He did. So is it just because activists from one cause will align with activists of another cause?
Intersectionality. We're all in this together.
Except for, so it doesn't matter if Donald Trump is okay with gays. You're not okay with Donald Trump.
No, he's the white male, cisgendered, evil.
Well, there's that. All right. Even more headlines when we return.
Entertaining.
Honest.
Independent thinker.
Eric Von Hessler.
Every day at 11.
And listen to both of the daily Von Hessler Doctrine Hours anytime with a WSB radio app. Hit the Listen on Demand tab.
And find on your desktop at evhdoctrine.com.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that after Karen Handel was sworn in, actually John Lewis was very gracious and said nice words on the floor of the House.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to welcome the newest member of the Georgia Congressional Delegation.
And that would be Karen Handel. Where was Hank Johnson? Hank, why weren't you there?
I did not go into the chamber because I figured that if we had one more person, it might tip over.
You were afraid. Okay, it's understandable. I get it. Give me another story.
The U.S. Army has successfully hit an unmanned target using a high-powered laser-mounted gun on an Apache AH-64.
It's a laser gun.
Yeah, laser
just
gun.
Just say
exactly.
It was a laser gun.
Laser gun. Yeah, it's awesome.
Bury the lead here. It was a high-mounted power. It was a laser gun.
That's awesome.
It's about time, is what I would say. We've been seeing lasers in movies since the 1940s. It's about time that we actually had lasers in our military. So it worked, right? It hit the thing and it went down.
It sure did.
I guess the problem with lasers has always been, which is the problem anytime you're using a frequency, is that when in the fog of war, literally, when there's dust, clouds, things like that, there can be some problems for lasers. So, but obviously these are areas you can use them from the sky on a nice day, and on a nice day, it's like War of the Worlds,
right?
And obviously out at sea you could use them quite well. I think they're putting them on boats. But all I would say is, you know, what's taking so long? 1942, 3, 4. I can find movies that have lasers in them. It's about time. We're making it happen.
It says the weapon is almost silent and invisible, which makes it particularly hard for enemies to detect and could be used on the battlefield in the near future.
Yeah, boy, you think drones are silent. These things, you're just walking down the street. Zzz.
That'll be the end of infantry. It's just one zap and they're all gone.
For the other guys, because yeah. I don't think anybody else is near us with the laser technology. Did you have any other stories real quick?
Yeah, Conor McGregor is relishing being the underdog for his fight against Floyd Mayweather next month.
Yeah, I'm glad. Are you paying for this fight?
No, but I'll go to a bar and watch it.
Okay, but in a way you are paying because there'll be a door charge, right?
Some bars don't actually charge.
Two drink minimum or something.
There are some that do and some that don't. I actually know of, last fight I went to, I did not have to pay for that.
I like this idea that Conor McGregor, because all he cares about is that he gets $60 million or whatever on the pay-per-view, because the Von Hessler Doctrine is going to tell you that I would be surprised if it makes it to the third round. In reality, I'll be surprised if it makes it to the second round. In reality, I'll be surprised if it makes it to the second minute. But I'm going to be a little more, I'm going to give myself a little more wiggle room there. That fight doesn't go to the third round. This guy's going to get everything beat out of him. Like that girl the other day. You know the one I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, Justine.
Yeah, she couldn't keep it in her pants. I don't think he's going to be able to either. All right, we have something I call Sparring with Dr. Joe when we return. Welcome back. I'm Eric Von Hessler. This is the Von Hessler Doctrine. The other voices you hear are the Doctrinaires. We're adding a voice for this segment. It's a new segment for us. You know, Dr. Joe Esposito, his show is on 7 to 9 on, Saturdays or Sundays?
Sunday nights, yes.
Sunday nights, okay.
Yes.
I hate to, you know, do that to you, but I'm going, you know.
You're sleeping at that
time. I am, but, you know, I consider you a friend. I want people who are listening, I want them to listen into the Dr. Joe show, 7 to 9, and then 6 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Correct.
Now, what were you? You were saying that's coast to coast. You were bragging. You were bragging just a minute ago.
Well, absolutely. We're coast to coast now.
Coast to coast.
Yeah, we're based here in Atlanta, but we're coast to coast.
Does the federal government know about this?
I don't think so.
But something that probably won't last long.
Canada's actually picking up the show, hopefully, in a couple of months, too.
Oh, so, well, yeah. Look at that.
International,
wow. No
man.
No wonder you're walking around here like Mr. Big Old Pants.
Yeah.
So Dr. Joe and I are constantly sparring in the hallways here.
Yes.
Because we're different types of people. So you've got Dr. Joe is he's a health nut. Okay, the water has to be electrified before he drinks it. Everything is to down. And if he's a health nut, I guess I would just categorize myself as not that. I would be the opposite of that. And we're constantly going back and forth. And I haven't heard this sounder here, this imager. So I don't know how good or bad it is. But Alan Hunt. Who runs this spaceship is nodding, his head's going back and forth like, I don't think you're going to dig this one, Eric, but go ahead.
Sparring with Dr. Joe.
Hey, you know what? It was last minute, Alan.
I think it was good.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Started making it at 11 o'clock. I think it came out just, I'm going to be cool with that. That's fine.
All right.
So Dr. Joe, by the way, so he walks in. Dr. Joe hands me almonds, which he's always handing out. And then he also hands me Dr. Joe's intestinal cleanser, which are these pills?
Pills, yes.
Okay, and Dr. Joe's face is on them. His picture of him is on Dr. Joe's intestinal cleanser. First of all, what I want you to know is if this stuff works, I don't have an act anymore.
Yeah, you won't be full of it anymore.
That's number one.
Exactly.
That's number one. Probably not great. Probably not a great idea for me. And secondly, given what this is about and what it's going to do to me, I don't know that I want to be looking at your face on the pills. There's a connection there that I'm not too comfortable with. But no, you gave this to me because I told you that I was like a Metamucil guy.
Yes.
And Well, thank you. But I'm going to take the label off.
That's perfectly fine. Yes.
I can't have you in my bathroom. And, you know, just, so
take the label off. Just remember what's in the bottle, though.
So. Okay. Can I overdose on these things?
Yes, you can.
Oh, yeah. Okay. what's the limit of how many of these I should take? Let's say I'm going to a wedding or something. I want to be emptied out. How many hours before the wedding should I take Dr. Joe's intestinal cleanser?
Take one the night before. The next morning, everything should be working wonderful. If not, take two the next day or take three the next day.
Okay.
Don't take more than... I had a patient take six one time. She was not happy.
Not a good idea. Right. Not a good idea. Because at some point, you're empty and you're still emptying.
Exactly, yes.
This is a family show, Dr. Joe. So I want to. So Dr. Joe is super healthy, and I'm not. And we spar about a lot of things. But I wanted to get you in here. Actually, I like the idea of talking about health issues from time to time. Obviously, what's going on right now with what we would call the invention of Trump Care to replace Obamacare. The House passed a bill. Now the Senate is trying to get something together. They're losing Republicans, 5-7 of them. The Democrats hate it. Many of the Republicans don't like it. What I say, Dr. Joe, is that there's no making this good. You can't tweak Obamacare and make it suddenly entrepreneurial, capitalistic, and still have the same idea that you're going to help people pay their medical bills. I don't know where you stand on this, but I feel that it's a Frankenstein's monster, and they made the mistake last year when they ran on repeal and replace. They should have run on repeal, but I guess they knew internals told them they wouldn't win on that. When you try to replace, there is no capitalist version of Obamacare. You're just going to end up with, like I said, a Frankenstein's monster. What do you think?
You know, I hate to agree with you on that. But I actually do agree with you on that. But I think what's missing, and this is the thing that no one is talking about, they're not talking about health care. They're talking about insurance.
Yes. You know, you and I, this is sparring with Dr. Joe.
And we're agreeing.
But we're agreeing. I said this many times. If the problem was insurance, why didn't we just fix insurance?
Correct.
Why did they have to go in and start messing with healthcare? I would argue for power, purposes of power, being able to control people's lives. That's where I come from in my libertarian perspective. But people weren't saying that that doctors weren't doing a good job at doing whatever it is, surgery, whatever had to be done. They were saying paying for it is a problem.
Right.
Why didn't we just address paying for it as opposed to the actual healthcare itself?
Yeah, and this is the kicker. I've been in practice 32 years. So my benefit, what I'm getting paid as a doctor, is dropped dramatically. Mm-hmm. Where I would get $110 for one service, now I get $45 for that service. My overhead didn't change.
Yeah.
Every doctor I know, I'm a chiropractor, I know orthopedics, neurologist. Every doctor I know says the same thing. We used to talk about, we get together, girls in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Now we talk about, what's your exit strategy? What are you going to do to retire? We have a doctor shortage, and it's happening, mm-hmm. and nobody's addressing it. And I promise you, regardless of what happens, you're not going to be able to find a doctor in the next 5 to 10 years.
I have doctors on my wife's side of the family, so I'm a little familiar with this, and I see exactly what's going on. And I've talked about this before. The social engineers will look at something and say, well, if we change this and we change that and we incentivize this particular behavior, we'll get more of what we want. But what they never what they can't understand is they can't make the next generation do it. So they can make your life a living hell.
Right.
They can say that you can't charge what you need to charge to meet your overhead. They can make you fill out a bunch of paperwork you didn't used to have to fill out, deal with all the red tape. But what they can't do is, if you had a 17-year-old son, they can't have you tell your son to become a doctor.
And that's where the problem's
coming. That's where it is. Because they can make your life a living hell, because you're in already.
I can't get out, right.
You can't get out. But if you are 17 or 18 or 19 and you're thinking about the 10 to 12 years that it's going to take you to become a doctor, if you're smart enough to be a doctor, you're smart enough to be a lawyer, you're smart enough to be some kind of engineer.
Right.
You can choose not to be a doctor. So where we're going, which I think is single payer ultimately,
mm-hmm.
it will be a few years before we really see the pain and how dismal it will be. At first, it'll be guys like you who are a little bit miserable about it. Things aren't as good as they used to be. Then the doctors that we have won't be as good as the doctors we had in the past, because you'll have a lot of brilliant people deciding, I'm just not going to go into that. It's too much. And people don't like the fact that doctors make money, but it's a 12-year journey to hang out your shingle.
Yes.
How many, after 12 years of education, you want the payoff, because, by the way, you got loans like crazy to begin with.
And you didn't work for 12 years. You went to school.
You went to school, you did residency, you did the whole nine. And I think that, when I think about this, if it's time for me to get surgery on some major organ or mm-hmm. something, I want the doctor that has the most to lose to cut me open.
Absolutely.
I don't want the charity guy. I don't want the guy who's like, hey, I go on the inner city on the weekends and I give out some.
Right.
No, I don't want that. I want the guy with three houses. Each one has a jacuzzi, maybe a couple of Lamborghini. Right. When he cuts into me, that guy's got something to lose. The charity doctor, if he cuts into me and messes up, hey man, I tried, right?
Yeah.
I didn't charge you anything, so I want the guy to have something to lose. So I believe, obviously, in the capitalist system, as you do. So
absolutely.
We agree on this. Let's see if we can disagree on something.
Go ahead.
Since we did call this sparring,
yes.
with Dr. Joe, we've been agreeing with Dr. Joe, but that's okay. The opioid crisis.
Yes,
I feel like the government is about to get involved here in a big way and in the wrong way. I'm seeing the messages already. It seems like the old drug war, the old answers mm-hmm. all over again. Let's go after doctors who are prescribing painkillers. Let's put people in jail because they want to feel euphoric.
Yeah.
This is something that I don't understand at all. Why anybody's put in jail because they're trying to feel euphoric is it's criminal behavior to me. You're turning somebody into an outlaw at that point. If it's somebody who otherwise pays their taxes and does their thing, the fact that they want to feel wonderful on the weekend, now it's not good. I say deal with addiction. Don't deal with the actual, you know.
Well, the thing that happens with opioids is we take opioids because we have pain. That's where the prescription drugs come in. No one, again, is addressing why are we in pain. I can take a pill to cover up my pain, but the question is, why do I have pain? Is it a pinched nerve? Is it neck pain, back pain, shoulder pain?
30 years of marriage, maybe.
Sorry. Personal experience here? But that's the kicker, is no one is addressing, goes back to this first statement, healthcare.
Yeah.
We keep talking about insurance. Opioids, what about healthcare? Why does somebody have back pain? And mm-hmm. what can we do? What works better? Well, chiropractic works great. Massage works great. Acupuncture works great. If that doesn't work, mm-hmm. we always have the backup of the medication. But getting to the cause of the problem now solves the problem.
So you're saying you can agree that maybe there's too much just knee-jerk prescriptions being written to begin with.
Right.
As opposed to actually getting involved with the pain and then hold that back. I think that's fine. If you want to start somewhere else, but my fear is that, you know, there was a time when you were in chronic pain in this country, they just said, well, you just got to deal with
right.
it. And what I worry about is the way that we're going on the opioid crisis now, we're going to end up with people with chronic pain and be told, hey, the law says that you just have to be in pain now.
Exactly.
Because some people are just in chronic pain, right?
Sometimes there's chronic pain. Right. And I'm not against drugs. I'm not against surgery. I'm against unnecessary use of drugs and surgery,
sure.
as is every doctor I've ever known. But sometimes we're stuck. What do we do? And we go back to the insurance companies yeah. again. We're not going to allow you to get this treatment because we, whoever we are, decided that it's not necessary.
What I don't like, though, is I'm seeing attorneys general from around the country. They seem to be going into the tobacco mode. And they want to go after pharmaceuticals. See, they always go where the money is.
Sure.
And they want to go after the pharmaceuticals, and they're trying to make a case, much like the tobacco case, saying, you knew this stuff was addictive, and you kept prescribing
right.
it, or kept making it available, and showing us studies that apparently that said it wasn't addictive. Now, come on. I'm not any kind of scientist, but it doesn't take much to figure out that a pill that makes you feel euphoric is something that is easily addicted. You can get addicted
right.
to something like that. We all want to feel better.
Sure.
And if you give me a pill and I just suddenly feel great, I don't need a bunch of research to tell me I have to watch it.
Right.
Because people like to feel great.
Sure. And it affects the part of your brain, like the nucleus accumbens. That's the part of the brain that releases.
Ooh, that was the name of my first band.
Was it really?
Yeah,
nucleus accumbens?
Yeah, we were good. We didn't travel well.
Well, it releases dopamine into the brain.
Yeah.
So if you're taking things that are releasing dopamine, now your body's not producing its own
mm-hmm.
GABA dopamine neurotransmitters that make you feel good. And so when you start to come off it, your body's like, well, I haven't produced this stuff in a long time. I kind of forgot how, you
right.
know, making it simple. And so now you say, wait a minute, I'm not producing my own. I need it from an external source.
Yeah. And so, then when you can't get the prescription, heroin's cheap.
There you go.
Right? That's basically
right.
what's happening
uh-huh.
in society.
Yeah.
I just think that, look, it is a problem, but I agree with you. Up front, let's see what the pain is. Let's treat it a little better before we go to drugs.
Right.
But from a social policy standpoint, I would treat addiction. I'm a libertarian. I don't like spending money, but I'd much rather spend money on addiction than I would on putting more people in jail because they want to feel good.
Yeah.
No one should be put in jail because they took something to feel good. That's insane.
Yep. No, deal with the cause. Don't treat the symptoms.
All right, Dr. Joe, I got your intestinal cleanser here. I'm going to take it home. I'm going to tear your face off of it, and then I'm going to take it. What are you doing?
It's on the Facebook page, too, if you want to see it for yourself.
Oh, there Dr. Joe's intestinal cleanser. Dr. Joe's show is 7 to 9 on Sunday night. On Saturday night.
Sunday night.
Why do I say Sunday night? Okay. Thank you, Dr. Joe.
Thanks for having me here. See you soon.
Entertaining.
Honest.
Independent thinker.
Eric Von Hessler.
Every day at 11.
And listen to both of the Daily Von Hessler Doctrine Hours anytime with a WSB radio app. Hit the Listen on Demand tab.
And find on your desktop at evhdoctrine.com.
Final segment of the day. Jared, there was somebody had a question on Facebook.
Yeah, this is from the Von Hessler Doctrine Facebook page. Sean wrote, Dr. Joe, where can I find the intestine cleaner you were just talking about on the show with Eric?
Are you talking about Dr. Joe's intestinal cleanser, which has a picture of Dr. Joe on it? Well, we should have said this earlier, your website, right?
Go to my website, drjoeesposito.com, or just Google Dr. Joe with the number one Dr. Joe in the world. That I have other
You're the number one Dr. Joe in the world.
Dr. Joe in the world.
Don't let it go to your head, young man. I to say that we called the segment Sparring with Dr. Joe. We didn't really, but we didn't get to, give me this story real fast, because this is one we actually disagree.
Yeah, HBO's John Oliver took a shot at the anti-vaccine movement and the opportunistic quacks behind it on his talk show.
First of all, I agree with John Oliver on this one, but I'm so sick and tired of people from other countries who have comedy shows that come here to tell us how stupid our country. Don't we have?
You're a bunch of morons.
Don't we have American comedians that can get their own shows to tell us how stupid we are? Anyway, that's beside the point. So, Dr. Joe, you are anti-vaccine to a certain degree. Now, we disagree completely
on
this.
Okay, so it's
you
not.
You give me your argument. Because I think that when you vaccinate, you're protecting other people, not just yourself.
Right. And it's not just the vaccine, it's what's in the vaccine. They put something in it called adjuvants. Adjuvants like mercury. Aluminum.
Okay.
And so what happens is the aluminum gets into the body, the immune system gets all stimulated because this foreign invader is there.
Yeah.
And it stimulates the immune system. Works great. The problem is your body can't, in many cases, get rid of the aluminum or get rid of the mercury.
Yeah, but I mean, all that being said, you're going to come back, right? We're going to do sparring with Dr.
Joe.
We're
sparring,
we just opened up a Pandora's box
that's
here.
Right. We're ready.
Now, I want you to know, I disagree with you completely. I want people to know, we completely disagree
on
it.
We can fight on this one.
Because I believe that the good from vaccines so much outweighs the possible bad.
Okay.
Next time you're on, we'll start with vaccines.
We'll have
a true sparring with Dr. Joe.
Vax Facts.
What are you writing to me over there? We just said his website.
One more time.
Say it again.
DrJoeEsposito.com or Google Dr. Joe.
All right, guess what? We don't have a podcast today because we did 3 hours. We were in for Herman and then ourselves, and we're not used to doing real work, so, you know, we're exhausted.
But you did a great job.
Thank you very much, Dr. Joe. And your next time you're on, I'm going to take Dr. Joe's intestinal cleanser. I'll take like 5 of them before you show up, and it'll be Dr. Joe's intestinal challenge. We'll see how long I can actually last. All right, that was the radio hours, I should say. We'll chat with you again tomorrow at 11, but until then, get off my lawn!
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.